Welcome to the Advisor Gap podcast, hosted by me, Sean Banks.
And me, James Mousley. If you're an aspiring financial advisor who's searching for support and guidance on how to bridge a gap from your current role to an advisory position, you have come to the right place.
With the help of some esteemed guests along the way, we hope to lift the lid on the path to becoming a financial advisor and how this has changed over the years.
We hope that you'll join us on the journey to drive our fantastic profession forwards and that this podcast helps you develop your skills as a financial planning professional.
With the intro out of the way, let's crack on with this week's show. Hello and welcome once again to the Advisor Gap podcast with me, Sean Banks, and James Mousley. James, how's it going, mate?
I'm doing really well, really well. Looking forward to kicking off today's show.
As am I. So today, a bit of a bonus for you guys. We're lucky enough to be joined by somebody who has been called the father of life planning, Mr. George Kinder. We spent a bit of time with him recently during his stay in London, and we sort of talk all things life planning in this episode.
With that in mind, over to the show with the one and only Mr. George Kinder.
Hi guys, we've got an absolute treat for you today. We're lucky enough to be joined by the father of life planning, Mr. George Kinder. George, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Sean.
So for listeners who perhaps don't know much about you, who you are and what you do, could you give a brief introduction into who is George Kinder?
Who is George Kinder is more complex. But I think what your podcast has been about and what your audience is probably most interested in is the life planning work that I've done.
Yeah.
I've been a financial advisor for, 40 years? I mean, it's something, something astonishing. but most of that, I mean, the last half of that has been largely training financial advisors all over the world primarily in how to do financial planning right, which is putting the client first and delivering them into their dream of freedom, and learning how to do that in a way that is absolutely inspiring to the client, and clearly quite rich for the advisor as well.
And what is it that you think's kept you engaged in financial planning or financial advice for so long?
To me, freedom is the main, and not so much for me as it's really inspiring to work with clients and see transformations occur inside of them, almost instantaneously as you're working with them, and then realize you've got all the financial skills to deliver them into the world that they really want to go to.
Okay.
So that's just phenomenal. So in the last 20 years or so, my focus has been largely on the financial advisory community.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been, in the trainings, we have that same thrill of seeing seeing the advisors change. And then knowing that they're going to deliver that quality of freedom.
Yeah.
To 100 people that year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
So it's kind of, you're now, at the start of your journey, you were helping individual clients,
right.
But now you're passing on your skills to help more and more people, to try and reach more and more people effectively.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So perhaps, George, you could define what life planning is for those listeners who aren't quite sure what it is or haven't heard of it before.
Yes. a life planning has been called financial planning done right. And there are a number of ways to approach it. One is to realize that it's about putting the client first rather than their money.
Yeah.
Would be one way. Another way of thinking of it is that it's the whole financial planning process, but that starts with a real engagement with the client as to what they're all about, what they're really all about.
Yeah.
And then a third way that it's been framed at times is that it's the initial phase of the financial planning process,
right,
where your listening skills are highly tuned, the client comes first, and you discover in that process who it is that the client really wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that becomes the focus of the financial plan.
And was there a sort of light bulb moment for you, if you like, in terms of this is financial planning done right, this is life planning, or was it just something that you naturally did anyway from the beginning?
It's very interesting, Sean. When I was, I started my business as a tax advisor. I'm basically doing tax returns
okay.
for clients. And what I quickly realized there, it was pretty boring just doing the numbers. I mean, I was good at the numbers.
Yeah.
And I could do them in my head. In those days, we did it with adding machines. And one of the things I prided myself on was being able to add a stack of numbers faster and more accurately than an adding machine.
Okay.
So I was really good at it. But that was kind of trivial and kind of boring. And what was interesting was hearing who the client was and realizing that in listening well to them, you might be able to find things that they could deduct from their income that they'd never thought of before.
Mm.
And then searching in the rules and regulations in America to do that. And that was really extremely interesting. And it was out of that, I think, that experience of recognizing that when you really listen to the clients and you put them first, that it becomes an interesting engagement.
Yeah.
That you get to know them as a person, they get to know you as a person, and you're delivering something of real value to them. So that, it was natural when I moved to financial planning that would be the way I would do it.
Great.
And how long was the time frame from when you start as a tax advisor to get to what you now describe as life planning and watch or night? His life planning for clients.
Well, you know, you get better and better.
Yeah.
We never look forward to aging, but one of the things that happens is you actually get better and better at the things you do.
Yeah.
It's just the body that begins to get a little creaky. So that's really been a wonderful thing. Is that I don't know that I've reached my peak.
Yeah. The continual journey is still going.
Right.
And because we talk to a lot of younger or career transitioners, and they're always saying, well, how long is it taking you to get to this stage, and how long is it taking you to get to that stage? And our usual answer is, we're still learning ourselves.
Yeah.
But everyone works differently. Everyone learns at different paces. So it's just to give people kind of a rough estimate of the people that you've coached and taught around the world.
Yeah.
How long do you think it is to get from starting in the profession to becoming what you might define as a good lifestyle financial planner?
5 days.
That's a good answer. True.
How does one do that in 5 days?
Well, you know, it was quite intentional, obviously, answering that way. The skills of a life planner are the deepest skills and the most important skills.
Yeah.
Are really wonderful because they're about yourself. They're about knowing yourself. It has to do with self-knowledge. So the two most important skills, the first one is probably listening, that you listen really, really well and attentively, and you're connected, and you're not putting your financial stuff first, you're not putting your experiences first, you're really listening to who the person is. That's an extraordinary thing. That's a gift if you think about it. If you think about the people who've really listened to you and your lives and what a difference it's made to you. And then the second thing is living your own life plan.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not on fire about kind of who you are and who you're becoming and what you're doing in your life, you're not likely to be able to see into how your client longs for something.
Yes.
And one of the really cool things about the 5-day program that we lead is that you not only learn the skills of each meeting, and each meeting's different that you do, but because there is a process to delivering the life plan, but you also get life planned.
Yeah.
So many of us think, well, I'm pretty much there, right? Uh-huh. But what happens in that process is someone says, you aren't doing that, because it's something that you really love, and you think, oh, I'll do that and get to that in a couple of years, or I can't manage it because of the kids or the mortgage or the business or whatever. And a great life planner will see that your passion is there, that your love is there, that what you care about is there, and they'll go, boy, it's time. It's time to make that happen.
Yeah,
that's phenomenal. So when that's done to you, you're much more likely to have the chutzpah to do it with the client in front of you.
Yeah. Right. So for people that are entering the profession or want to become financial advisors initially, because I think most people would sort of see the role of what we do as a financial advisor initially, and then it's like a journey of discovery to get to the life planning phase.
Right.
Maybe you could just give us some reasons why somebody should explore life planning rather than just being what we define as a financial advisor.
When I have people come to me and ask me what course they should take first and what they should do first, should they get their CFP, should they get chartered, should they do life planning, there's absolutely no question in my mind that life planning should come first. And for the same reason that a client comes first, the client's life. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you're dominated by thinking about the finances, about the spreadsheets, about the products, you think that that's the way you're going to deliver your financial planning process.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend doing the life planning piece first. And it will clarify, first of all, it will clarify two things. One is that we'll clarify how you want to approach your client relationship. And it may be that in doing it, you learn that some of the traditional financial planning pieces aren't really relevant to you, not really what you want to do in that process.
Right.
So one of the things that will give you some of that discovery. But the other thing it will do is will give you a really clear notion of who you are.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we go, like you're talking about the advisor gap here, and the movement from kind of an admin or managerial or any kind of posture to the profession itself. And oftentimes we just see that as a natural movement in our career, and it's been framed for us, and we just go, well, much better, really, to take kind of a breath of fresh air and get some distance and look at who you really want to be. And are you on target to doing that? And will that movement toward the advisor role, and particularly the advisor role in the company you're in, will it actually fulfill who it is you want to be?
Wow.
That's what you want. And it's a waste of time. You know, if you go down, here I am, I've been in the business for 45 years, really.
Yeah.
And if you go down a path that is not the right path, you'll learn things. It's fabulous. You'll learn things. But so much more you can deliver into the world if you're actually going down a path that you're on fire about.
Yeah.
That you know is your path.
Yeah. As with clients, you often come across people struggling to answer those questions. So I think if you spoke to me, maybe even 3 years ago, at that time I'd been advising clients maybe a couple of years, I probably couldn't have answered some of those big questions. So I suppose, how have you managed to get people to answer those questions or really look inside themselves?
Yeah.
And then work out, okay, where I'm at today might not be the right thing for me.
Right. The life planning process that we teach is pretty remarkable and pretty thoughtful in terms of its approach, because it's challenging. We've had people come out of a 5-day and they're basically a salesperson.
Yeah.
and they leave, and they still have a lot of that sales stuff, and they're used to selling product. And we've had people approach clients in a way that still has so much of that sales element that the client is offended, and they won't go there. With so we've had to train them a bit in, well, how do you market it? How do you write the email? And how do you really put the client first so that they're willing to go there? What we do in a life planning process, the EVOKE model, which is what you learn in the 5-day, the three phases that are the life planning elements of the of EVOKE are E, V, and O. It's an acronym.
Okay.
And E is for exploration, V is for vision, and O is for obstacles. In the E meeting, what we do, which is the initial meeting, it's the meeting where the client really talks probably close to 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And pretty much all you ask is, why are you here? What would you like to get out of a series of meetings? Why are you here? And if they're too much on their SIP, on their retirement plan, on their portfolio, on their taxes, you go, no, I mean, you know, if you really were to put money to use for who you really want to be, what would that look like? And that's pretty much the only question you ask. And they begin to talk, and at first they may be stumbling over their thoughts. But you, wherever they pause, you pause. And you give them plenty of time to go through that awkwardness and find their way to what's deeper, what's more meaningful. So there's a lot of pauses in it, but there you also learn to be empathic, where you see that they're not happy at work, or not happy with their kids, or not happy with their stage of life in some way. Mm-hmm. You're empathic. And wherever they speak about something that they just love, you get excited. Yeah. You know, so it's really simple relationship skills. But what happens as a consequence of that meeting is that the client, throughout that meeting, is gathering deeper and deeper trust in talking with you and in sharing who they are. And so they go to places they often don't go in any other, even with their best mates. Often they haven't gone to these places. And so they leave the meeting and they go, wow, that was like the best conversation I've ever had. I mean, that's not an uncommon response. And that you laugh inside yourself, you chuckle, because you realize it wasn't a conversation. You just gave them the space to talk and explore who they are.
Yeah.
So the first meeting is the meeting of trust. And once you've done that, then you can ask the questions that are powerful and profound questions.
Just picking up on one thing there, that when you give an example of the question that you ask initially in that meeting, I've just picked up on the sort of the tonality that you use when you've asked that question.
Yeah.
And it's quite inviting to get somebody to actually answer that. Is that something that you teach with the EVOKE program?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's and what's exciting there, and why I said 5 days, what's exciting there is that not only do you get it taught it, and you feel awkward, and you go, how can I make this change, and how can I, you know, and you watch Louis or you watch me deliver it, and you go, boy, I'll never get there. But what you do is you actually watch a number of trainers. We typically have 2, 3, 4 trainers. Usually it's 3 or 4 trainers. And usually there's 10 or 12 advisors. So the student-teacher ratio is fabulous. But what you do with the 10 or 12 is you're watching each of them. And you're learning from each of them.
Yeah.
And they're making, you know, the mistakes, the same mistakes you would make. And so you're picking up, you know, quite quickly, oh, I pause there.
Mm.
Or, oh, that's an emotional moment. I want to be there in a way that honors that for the client. Oh, I don't leap in and ask another question, but I just say, anything else?
Mm-hmm.
And so you just watch, and you're learning all the time. So it's not just the challenge of making the shift yourself. You're constantly picking it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
One other question I wanted to ask you is, you know, how do you get, and I appreciate you might want to not give too much away here, but how do you get from, you know, sitting there and having those deep, meaningful conversations with your clients, they've gone places they didn't think they would go in that meeting. You're having such a fantastic time, and then suddenly it's, can you sign here and pay my fees?
How do you transition from that sort of world where you're just taking the clients away, and then suddenly it's back to business and you have to get paid?
You know, the regulations you have here in the UK are different from the US, and that my experience was largely in the US, but they overlap quite a bit. And I never asked anybody to pay. What I would do at the end of the first meeting is I would have already sent out the materials, so they would have seen the contract that we normally have and all of that. They might have brought it in, or I might have a copy there beside me. And at the end of the meeting, I just say, it doesn't matter when you, when you sign up, and you know, it doesn't matter. And what the client will typically go is, no, I want to do it right away. I want to get going. I want to transfer the assets. I want to get going on the investments, all of this stuff. I want to get moving on it. So that's the trust builds that, and I would typically land a client at the end of the first meeting. They would sign at the end of the first meeting, and that was probably 70% of the clients, maybe 80%, and the rest would sign. I mean, at the end of my career, I was signing 100% of the clients that came in, and so the rest would sign at the beginning. They'd bring in the contract at the beginning of the second meeting. Yeah. Say, let's get this over with.
There we are.
Fantastic.
Obviously, fees and talking about fees is one challenge, but are there any other common challenges that you see with those advisors or planners coming to your Evoke course? Are there any common themes that you see struggling to make that transition, I suppose?
I mean, there are many challenges, obviously. Life is filled with them. And when you're taking on a new task like this to learn to be a financial advisor, there are many challenges. But it's similar with Evoke. When you build a powerful vision for yourself, there's no challenges. Right? You just go, I'm going. I'm going to make it happen. And that's really what happens, is that we can list a number of those things. There's do they continue in the firm that they're with? Do they set up on their own? Do they like the methodology of the financial planning process that they're working with or of investing? Usually they're sponges for new information to see what really would work best. How to become a better listener? How do I really, I'm watching you guys, and I know I've grown a lot during this course and I'm ready to roll, but how do I continue to do that? And so there are skills for that. Going off and delivering themselves into their own life plan, that's a very important stage and process, because it's in doing that they build their confidence that this works, this is the right thing.
So basically, it all starts from within, and that confidence then flows out into the world. And
all starts within.
That's brilliant. And obviously, your journey from starting the Kinder Institute, you've written a number of different books about the process. Did you want to talk us through kind of your journey of writing those books and where you got to today?
You know, your first question that you asked in the interview, you said, introduce George Kinder. I'm an artist. I'm a poet. I'm a visionary. That's who I really am. But here we are, we're talking life planning. And so the first book I wrote, I had the freedom, my wife at the time gave me a couple of years to do what I wanted, then I gave her a couple of years to do what she wanted, and I wanted to write poetry, I wanted to do painting, I wanted to meditate in the fields. I live not far from where Henry David Thoreau did his work on Walden Pond, and so that was what I really wanted. But the truth is, you know, you got to pay the bills. And so I came back and I had to master something that would pay bills. And even though my passion was to do something kind of wildly deep and creative and strange and to explore the world, in more internally and artistically, I was extremely good at in school at maths and economics and all of that, so it was natural really to choose something that was largely mathematical, that I could master very easily. And it was also, a lot of people said, well, you want to write and you want to paint, why don't you become a graphic designer, or why don't you become a journalist? Yeah. And I realized that if I did either of those things, I would be making superficial what I wanted to do with writing and what I wanted to do with painting.
Yes.
So I thought, no, I'm going to do something completely different. And so I went after the mathematical stuff, the financial stuff. So the first book I wrote was actually a book. It's the only book I've written that has not been published.
Okay.
Now there's 8 other books that I'm in process with that haven't been published, but I haven't finished them. But this book, the first book I wrote, was a book of speculative philosophy.
Right.
It was a book of prose poems. It was a book where I studied subatomic physics and black hole gravitational physics.
Wow. Wow.
And then wrote but approached it from more of a consciousness spiritual kind of perspective.
Okay.
And so I wrote a series of prose poems, did a series of ink washes for it, never published. And and then I had to make a living.
I mean, who's going to buy that book?
Yeah. So the things I wanted to do, nobody would pay for. So I went and I went back to graduate school in accounting, became a tax advisor.
Yeah.
Discovered that the client was more important than the tax law, became a financial planner, studied, became a certified financial planner, which was the designation at that point that was available, and in America, and then didn't start to really write about it. I kept the writing really. 4 of the books that I'm writing are books of poetry and photography.
Okay.
And 4 of the books that I'm writing are plays, actually.
Oh, wow.
I've been inspired by Shakespeare's, one of the major influences in my life. So those are additional things. But what happened was that I did my advice work, and then somehow I stumbled into a speaking opportunity on the national stage in America, and I grabbed it with great trepidation, enormous fear, but I grabbed it, and people really liked what I had to say, and they were stunned by what I had to say.
Yeah.
So I began to then, I formed a think tank, and then with that think tank began to think, what is it that people really need to know about money?
Yeah.
And that's where the first book, The 7 Stages of Money Maturity, came from, was really thinking with them, going back to all the work that I'd done in philosophy and psychology and religion. A lot of my clients were therapists in the Cambridge area. I had a highly kind of intellectual and exploratory creative community there. I had a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of professors, a lot of therapists, a lot of creative artists. So it was a really interesting group of people. And there I was doing their tax returns. Right? But I'd learned that what was interesting was them. And they appreciated that. And then I started to go to their workshops to learn. And so I actually studied a lot of psychology on weekends, on 2-day workshops that they were taking. So I was learning really how to listen, I think, was the main thing. And learning about empathy. I'd come from a highly academic background.
Yeah.
And so my brain was really sharp. And my heart was well-meaning, but it wasn't well-developed in terms of relationship skills.
Okay.
So I learned a lot there. And that came out in the 7 stages of money maturity, and of the philosophy and the spiritual practice that I'd done. And obviously William Blake and Shakespeare play a role in that book as well. So that book was more of a philosophy or a psychology of money.
Yeah.
And then what happened was I realized that people were taking that and they were trying to do psychology.
Right.
They were trying to be therapists. And that wasn't really what I meant. So I had to write a couple of other books.
Yeah.
And the two other financial books were Lighting the Torch, which is difficult to get now. It's temporarily out of print.
Okay.
And then Life Planning for You, which is a consumer version of that book, which is also an Evoke book.
Yeah.
And has an Evoke consumer website that's a wonderful, simple website to do all these things.
Okay.
But what I also realized was that I wrote a book then of an introduction to mindfulness.
Right.
It's a wonderful, it has 80 different mindfulness practices in it, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's a wonderful introduction, and mindfulness to me is the root of the listening skills that make a great listener.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest, easiest way to learn how to be a great listener is to listen inside yourself and to watch kind of momentary emotions arise and pass away, momentary physical sensations arise, to watch your thoughts and not be driven by them. So it creates great, great listening skills. So that was a book then that I wrote that's been very useful in the community as well.
Yeah. And then we're on to the new book you've released.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you want to talk us through what that is?
Yeah, that's really taking over a lot of my life right now. I mean, I'm still, as you guys are doing, I'm still interviewed quite a bit about life planning, which
is
you know, so valuable. And I should talk about it in the context of the new book as well, because it I think that life planning is the way financial services really is meant to be. It is financial planning done right. And we've been caught up in a culture, largely because it's where the money is.
Yeah.
You know, the product companies
are
where the money is, and the product providers. And so, and they're tied in with the politicians, and even though the regulators seem to be on the other side, you know, they're regulating those guys, and we end up getting regulated, but it's really they're trying to regulate the product group.
Yeah, very much so.
And so it's really kludgy. It's really kind of awkward and inappropriate the way it's structured.
Yeah.
And we're the ones that are meant to lead financial services because we put the clients first.
Yeah.
And what we do by that is we deliver, by delivering freedom into a client's life, what happens is that the clients become profoundly entrepreneurial in their own life. You know, we all experience aspects of our life where we're filled with resentment, blame, and complaint, where we're lethargic, where we're, you know, and particularly in a highly politicized era like we feel right now in the UK and America and all over the developed world, we're filled with resentment, blame, and complaint. What happens in life planning is that we discover that living our life plan is far more powerful than that, and that all that resentment and blame and complaint holds us back from our full vitality living into the world. And that's profoundly entrepreneurial. And one of the kind of the mistakes of the system that's developed since Adam Smith and since the Industrial Revolution is that we've come to think of entrepreneurial as something that is pretty much delivered primarily by venture capital and private equity machines, factories, and it's squirreled away like drugs for the elite, and only they really have access to it the way we think of it. But entrepreneurial activity is, if you want a thriving society and a thriving civilization, everybody has entrepreneurial energy and is living with it. That's what life planning delivers. That's a phenomenal thing. So instead of the government delivering it by fiscal policy or by monetary policy, which are artificial constructs, and the monetary policy drives us into debt, and the fiscal policy is rife with, well, I mean, often both these things are needed, but the fiscal policy is rife with, well, what are the choices, and what kind of pork barrel politics is going on there? And so you have problems in both of them. Life planners, what we do is we meet the person and we deliver that entrepreneurial energy.
Yeah.
They don't need to be in debt to do it.
No.
They need the passion of, I mean, debt could be part of it, but they need a passion. So so the new book is not only talking about that, but it's also really life planning all of civilization.
Right.
And it's using the same skills of listening well, and then designing a profound vision for what we want from civilization. Like right now, with how we're stuck in this polarized society, we're stuck on relatively, some of them are large issues, but we've now had 100 conversations in 5 different continents, really all over the world, but largely, hugely in the UK and in the US. And they're called Golden Civilization Conversations. They've all come out of this book. And what we've done is, I mean, I've written my ideas, which are a resource, I hope, for people. But what we've done is we're encouraging in these groups people to come together and design their image of what a golden civilization would look like.
Right.
And even where they're coming from opposite poles, they describe the same thing. What they describe is a world that's filled with kindness, collaboration, diversity, engagement, vitality. Mm-hmm. It's all the same stuff.
So
my thought is, let's get that vision, and then let's encourage everybody to work on it. Let's have a more active and participative democracy, where people are engaged in a way, and we're not then going to get stuck in this polarized system that seems to be driven by much larger forces than us, and where we feel pretty powerless. Let's be involved.
It sounds like a pretty powerful book then, George. I mean, where can people buy it, I suppose?
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
A lot of the bookstores don't have it yet because we aren't working with a major publisher, but you can get it through the bookstores as well. Okay. Amazon is so easy, and it's on both Kindle, and the audiobook is just coming up as well.
Okay.
But there's lots of charts in it. There's a subtitle called The Map of Mindfulness, and I do some very unusual things, not just with advice and all of this, but I do some very unusual things with how our whole frame of the world and time and space, I shift a bit. The maps, the charts are really worth kind of looking at and pondering.
So coming back to the advisor gap, I appreciate that the world of financial planning is probably, you know, completely different now to what it would have been when you started out sort of 40 or so years ago. Just wonder, what things would you focus on now the most if you were at the beginning of your journey again?
You know, I'm going to answer it in an odd way. What would you expect? I think the most important thing is each of our own self-knowledge. I mean, to know who we are. And that's, that sounds vague and broad, and how on earth do I do that, and all of that. But I do think that that's the most powerful thing, because the more that you can deliver who you feel you're really meant to be into the world, the more powerful your engagement in the world and your whole life and your influence and what you do is going to be. And so I would focus on two things. I think of self-knowledge as having two elements. One is knowing where your passions are, what you're really, what your life plan is. I'd say get life planned. If you can't do the 5-day, get life planned one way or another. And don't just trust yourself for it. To hear someone say, hey, you're missing this piece. You're so passionate about it. And you say, I'll get to that later. But you're so passionate about it, I think you can do it now. That's one of the most powerful things you can hear. And that's one of the things a life planner will do for you. So self-knowledge has two elements. One is what our aim is, where we're going, what our goals are, what our design of our life is right at the moment. And then the second one is the deeper self-knowledge that I think comes from something like a mindfulness practice, where you're really looking at, and this is one of the things I do with the map of mindfulness in the book, you're really looking at kind of moment by moment who you are and discovering it in a much deeper way. Yeah. You know, there's a couple of really interesting studies that, well, there's an interesting question. It's a trick question. And I can ask an audience of 1,000, and I get them all to raise their hand and say, yes, you know, and the question is, have you ever had a moment of freedom in the past? Doing something that you really love, walking the beach, making love, doing something extraordinarily creative, launching a business, being with your kids. And how many of you have had a moment of freedom in the past? And come on, you know, you egg them on and everybody raises their hand. I've already told them it's a trick question. And then I say, well, you all got that one wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And the truth is that we've never had an experience of freedom in the past.
Yeah.
We've always only had an experience of freedom in the present moment.
Yeah.
And at first that sounds rather trivial. You know, well, you tricked me. You know, that's obvious, George. Okay. But we map everything in terms of time and space. When we're doing a plan for a client, mm-hmm. we're looking at what they've accumulated over time, whether it's debt or assets, and we're looking at how that might be expended moving into the future, mm-hmm. right? So it's very useful, time and space, the way we've conceived of it. But our actual experience is the present moment. And there's another, and that has enormous meaning. And mm-hmm. let me just give one scientific study that's really extraordinary. There are many studies on this, but the most popular course at Harvard mm-hmm. over the last 15 years was by a guy named Daniel Gilbert.
Right.
Daniel Gilbert did a study with a man named Matthew Killingsworth. And that's in that sense on happiness. And in that study, do you know the study?
I haven't come across it, but
yeah. In that study, what they did was they created an iPhone app.
Okay.
And they gave this app to people in 80 countries all over the world. And what the app did was periodically, randomly through the day, it would ping you. You know, go, and you'd have immediately to go to your iPhone and put the app on and answer 3 questions.
Okay.
So the 3 questions were, what are you doing? Pretty easy to answer.
Yeah.
Second question, are you happy
yeah.
or unhappy? Okay. Third question, are you focused on what you're doing or are you distracted?
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's interesting. You'd think that walking the beach on Maui, you'd be happy, right?
Uh-huh.
And if you come home after a 10-hour day and you've got to, you know, do the laundry or take the garbage out or whatever, you're going to be unhappy.
Uh-huh.
No correlation. No correlation there at all. The correlation is, are you present?
Yeah.
Are you here?
Mm.
Or are you distracted? And so the title of the talk is, of the study is, a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. So one of the things in terms of self-knowledge is to know who we are in the moment.
Yeah.
And mindfulness is extraordinary at that. So part of it's the life plan, part of it's coming back to each moment. How do we deliver freedom to ourselves? And it's really by mastery of the present moment, more than anything. So,
Amazing answer.
Yeah, it's pretty deep.
Apologies for
that. Yeah, no, that's perfect, fine. Can we ask you what freedom is to you?
Yeah. I love mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
So I do it all the time. I do it a lot.
Okay.
And I love that. But I also, I've had to work it at times. I have a marvelous family. I didn't know that family was going to be important to me in the early days. Mm-hmm. And I have a wonderful wife and 2 wonderful kids who are now becoming teenagers and are beginning to let me know that they're own people. I love a creative life as well.
Yeah.
I love a life of thought and I love right now. I mean, I'm passionate about doing something in the world that makes a difference.
Yeah.
So what is that? And right now, these conversations really in their exercise in participative democracy.
Yeah.
I'm terribly concerned about the sustainability of democracy, of civilization, and,
yeah.
and of the planet. And so I'm excited at the same time that we've designed something in these conversations that might actually make all those things sustainable.
Yeah.
So that's
okay. And if we're thinking about a golden civilization,
yeah.
if we think of that in the context of life planning or financial planning,
yeah.
do you foresee that the financial planning firm of the future will be a mecca of many different disciplines?
Yeah.
So it won't just be money,
yeah.
it will be health and nutrition, it
yeah.
will be psychology, it will be career advice as well. Yeah. Do you think there will be those sort of practices?
I think that's a wonderful vision. I
yeah.
think that's very exciting. And I don't know for sure, but I think that the more that we know about those mm-hmm. things, the more that we can actually be of assistance mm-hmm. to the client when they come mm-hmm. in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic. I think we've got to be careful because we could be stuck in this room all day talking to you, George. So if you don't mind, I think now would be a good time for us to move on to the quickfire questions.
Oh, okay.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah, great.
So, George, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever been given?
I don't know. I know that... the best piece of advice that I could have been given, and if I were looking back when I was younger,
yeah.
mm. what I would have loved to have heard from someone was be true to yourself. Don't compromise.
Yeah.
Really find a way to be true to yourself, mm. to protect who you really are, your authenticity.
Pretty good advice, that one. if we were to look back in 10 years' time, how would you have liked the profession to have evolved?
Oh, 10 years out from now.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Gosh, I want you folks, you guys, I mean, you're young and you're out there. I want you to be leaders in uh-huh. financial services. I want the government to be listening to you,
yeah.
Not the product providers. I would love for you all, for your generation, to break through this this trauma of distrust
mm.
that we have, not just toward the financial advisors, but that it's huge with us,
mm-hmm.
to break through it and to lead the financial advice profession to be the top profession,
yeah.
where people look to it all over the country, all
yeah.
over the world, as being the people, you know, let me tell you about my financial advisor, how cool they are, and how great they are, and what they've helped me do. So to be viewed the way we might view a nurse or a doctor
yeah.
At their best. So that's what I would like to see.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
You've given us so much already, George, but do you have any advice for James and I?
Yeah. Leading question. Take the 5-day. Get out there and do the Evoke course because it will change your life, and it will in the most positive of possible ways. Mm-hmm. I realize there's you've got to find the time. There may be family issues. You've got there's money issues.
Yeah.
Find a way, and as soon as you can, because it will clarify for you what financial advice is really meant to be, how you're meant to deliver mm-hmm. financial advice, really clarify it. And at the same time, it will make your own life plan completely simpatico with what your business is meant to be. So that's
okay. What's next for George Kinder, I suppose?
You know, it's funny. I've given you a sense of how strange I am, you know, living a life of really of meditation and conceiving. I think of myself more as a poet than as anything else.
Yeah.
And so there's a way in which, if I were being life planned,
yeah.
that probably you would say, well, you ought to be out in the cabin that you have.
Yeah.
I have a cabin in Massachusetts. It's my writer's cabin. Uh-huh. And it's surrounded by water. It's on a peninsula going out into a modest-sized lake, an 80-acre lake. And you'd say, get out there and do your meditation and do your writing. And I do, and I will. But I am so concerned with what's happening with civilization.
Yeah.
I feel privileged, really privileged, for the life that I've had, even though it's had its own challenges all the way along.
Yeah.
But I feel privileged to have been educated, to be able to live a thoughtful life. I feel privileged to be here in London.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love this place. But I live in America and to spend time in Hawaii and occasionally to be called to other parts of the world. I feel so, so privileged. I don't want to see that lost.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'm concerned about the earth, and I'm concerned about democracy, and I'm concerned about civilization. So rather than just spend my time in the cabin, I've made a commitment to do appearances,
mm-hmm.
at least 3 times a week, wherever I am.
Yeah.
And here in London, it's often 5 or 6 times a week.
Yeah.
And to really try to address this issue that civilization's facing, and to bring the skills of life planning to how we view civilization. Let's create a great vision.
Yeah.
And let's all come together instead of being polarized. And let's make it happen. The politicians aren't doing it. We need to take leadership.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's make it happen.
Okay.
Yeah. So apart from the stuff that you've put out there, George, yourself, which, you know, is a vast body of work, something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Are there any other sort of books that you've read that have inspired you and you would recommend to other people, or a podcast you've listened to, or I don't know if you watch Netflix, but is there anything that sort of you've any material you've consumed that you would recommend to other people?
Yeah, I love literature and philosophy, and I love spiritual practice. And so my reading is dominated by the classics.
Yeah.
And so Blake and Shakespeare have been huge for me, two other people who've mm-hmm. walked the streets of London for most of their lives. And but I think the book that I would recommend that you've probably never heard of, and although I've quoted it occasionally in one of my books, is a book by a man who wrote a few decades before Shakespeare in China. And the version that I like best, he goes by many different names, and I've never quite figured out that story. He has many different names.
Yeah.
But the version that I like best is a translation by a man named Thomas Cleary.
Yeah.
C-L-E-A-R-Y.
Mm-hmm.
The book is called Back to Beginnings.
Okay.
The name that he uses for that author is Huanchu Daoren,
right.
which is spelled H-U-A-N-C-H-U, and then D-A-O-R-E-N.
Okay.
Huanchu Daoren wrote, his writing is all like half page or quarter page,
okay.
little nuggets of wisdom.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was an intermingling of the Confucian strain in China, of the Buddhist strain, and of the Taoist, Lao okay. Tzu and the Tao Te Ching strain. And he had been a government official, a civil servant, and retired. And the book helped me get through my toughest times. So it gives really wonderful, practical advice. One of the wonderful things I love, I mean, here when you're out, you know, trying to make a difference in the world, is that actually spending time with elderly peasants is worth more than spending time in the court.
Uh-huh.
So rather than someone who has kind of the arrogance of power, someone who lives a very simple life, that you're going to learn more from them about really who you are. So, but there are many things in it that are quite lovely, and I recommend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Is there any question that we haven't asked you that you thought we might ask, or you'd like us to ask you, I suppose?
No, I just hope I haven't been too odd for the audience.
No, it's been great for us.
Fresh air, I think. Yeah. Okay.
And just to wrap up, yeah. If anyone has any questions for you, where's best for them to write you?
Yeah, Kinder Institute is a powerhouse right now.
Yeah.
It is. We have just a fabulous staff there. And they're all working to attempt to both life plan civilization and also to bring these trainings to the world. So get in touch with Kinder Institute.
Mm-hmm.
The two websites, there's so many websites, but you could go to kinderinstitute.com.
Uh-huh.
You could go to agoldencivilization.com.
Uh-huh.
You could also go to lifeplanningforyou.com.
Uh-huh.
And all of them, you will find an avenue to email addresses that will find their way to me or to people who know more than I do about what you're asking.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly right. That's been brilliant, George. Yeah. Thank you for your time. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And then the audience are going to love this episode. So we're very privileged to have you here.
Yeah. Very grateful, George. Thank
fantastic.
You very much.
Thank you, guys.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Advisor Gap podcast. Links to some of the key highlights can be found in the show notes.
It'd be great if you could leave a review of the podcast on your chosen platform, as this helps more and more people find us and supports our mission of helping as many individuals as possible to bridge the Advisor Gap.
If you would like to find out more or have any questions for us, you can find us on Twitter at Advisor Gap. Please feel free to send us a direct message.
Until next time, thank you for listening, take care, and good luck on your journey.